He came eating and drinking. A look inside the meals of Jesus in the Gospel of Luke.
Okay, Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14, I'm going to continue a story that began last week. But while you're turning there, opening up your app to Luke chapter 14, I want to kind of bring you up to speed, share a story with you about kind of what's going on here in this story. I had the privilege of serving on several church staffs before I moved to Cincinnati and planted Missio Dei. So this is the third pastoral position that I've held. The first one was in South Carolina, and I was one of the pastors of the church, but not the lead pastor. And then from there, I went to plant a church in Asheville, North Carolina. I was a lead pastor there in that same role that I have here. But in the time that I've done that, while we were in North Carolina and South Carolina, we did not have a lot of family around to help us with our growing children. And so what we would do is not uncommon. We would connect with ladies in the church, and they would come over, and they would help us. They would watch our kids so that we could go out for the evening. And it was such a blessing to be able to do that. Now, we've got grandparents and aunts and uncles and all kinds of people that are coming and willing to, but back then it was just people in the church. And still sometimes that is the case for us. It's always a blessing. But I want to share with you something that happened that shouldn't happen by way of lesson. I filled you in on that this has happened in countless places so that you don't think that this is somebody here in this room that I'm trying to pick on. But here's what happens. When a husband and a wife go out to dinner without their kids, and when they come back from that dinner and there's a babysitter at the house, they're very grateful because they've spent time away from the house. They've been able to connect. They didn't have to spend time telling their children, hey, sit down, right? Don't throw that pee at your sister's face, right? Don't eat from a fork that you've dropped on the ground. You just get to sit down and connect and talk about what's going on in your heart. And a lot of time you talk about what's going on with the kids. But when you get that level of intimacy over dinner, when you come home, like you want to spend time together, right? And you don't want babysitters sticking around for hours and hours and hours, do you? Right? Now, that's happened in the past to the point where finally, like, we don't want to be a couple anymore after we've gotten home. And you guys know what couples want to do when they get home after a nice day, the taxes, right? They want to talk about refinance, adult, grown-up couple stuff, right? That's what they want to do. So if you're curious, that's what we're after. So what you need to do if you're ever in that situation is take whatever meager payment they give you, say thank you, inform them about the good, the bad, and the ugly, and be on your way. Right, we've experienced where the babysitter doesn't want to do that. They've thought to themselves, "Oh, I've got the pastor and his wife, and they're my captive audience, and I've just spent time with their kids, and so let's talk." Right, and they want to talk about it, and we don't want that. Like, they're overstaying their welcome. So don't do that. Okay, that's the first lesson by way of introduction. But it creates the setting of what's going on in the story here. Because we understand what it's like, whether you've been that babysitter, whether you've been the one that somebody's been around and you've been trying to drop clues and hints and they just don't pick it up, where you're finally like, I just want you to leave right now, right? Your welcome is done, it's over, and I need you to go. That's Jesus in this story this morning. Because Jesus was invited to this dinner. And all of a sudden, there's this man with dropsy. He shows up. Jesus heals him and sort of puts egg on the face of everybody that's there. And at this point, what we would expect is for Jesus to kindly make his way out of this party, right? He's already done what he came to do, and it's time for him to leave. But he doesn't leave, right? He's invited to this party, and so at this point, he stops and then starts to tell a story. And I'd imagine the people are like, oh my goodness, this man will not leave us alone. So let's look at what he says. Luke 14, verse 7. Now he told a parable to those who were invited when he noticed how they chose the places of honor, saying to them, when you're invited by someone to a wedding feast, do not sit down in a place of honor, lest someone more distinguished than you be invited by him. And he who invited you both will come and say to you, give your place to this person, and then you will begin with shame to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, Go and sit in the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at table with you. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. All right? So Jesus overstays his welcome, and then Luke tells us that he tells them a parable, which is kind of strange to me because it doesn't sound like at this point Jesus is telling a parable. It sounds like Jesus is just telling people what to do, right? When you're invited to a dinner, don't take the seat of highest honor. That doesn't sound like a parable. It sounds like straight up advice. Don't do this, do this instead. But Jesus overstays his welcome. He starts telling this story, and the point of his story is that the humble will be exalted, why the proud or the prideful will be humiliated. And here's what Jesus is not doing, okay? This is not unique to Jesus. He is simply explaining something the Bible has always taught. Proverbs 25, verse 6 and 7, that's what he's quoting here. He's just giving his own kind of spin and explanation and why it's important. What he's not doing is trying to teach you how to throw the proper party, okay? This isn't etiquette by Jesus. He's not saying, hey, if you want to be exalted, sit in the lowly place. He's saying, don't be prideful in your heart. Jesus is always driving to the heart. So it's not just, hey, behave really well and this will be great. He's trying to get after the hearts, the thoughts and the intentions of your heart. Now, if this doesn't make a whole lot of sense to you, let me put it in a common cultural perspective. In ancient times, when you threw a banquet, the people that were closest to the host were the distinguished guests. Those were the seats of honor. That's the way they did it. Now, we do things that are similar, right? So if you've been to a wedding, you know there are tables that are reserved, one for the bride and the groom, and then for the guests, right? The bridal party, and then all of the invitees. They sit elsewhere. And if that doesn't make any sense to you because you've never been to a wedding, maybe you've been to a Thanksgiving dinner when there's not enough seats at the table with the turkey. Some of you are like, I'm a vegetarian. We have turkey. I don't know what to tell you. But there's a table with a turkey on it at Thanksgiving. And if there's overflow, it's usually a card table with the children, right? Some of you are like, yeah, I still sit there. I've graduated college, but I'm still at the kiddie table. Okay? The thing to do isn't to go take grandpa's chair. Okay. You will be put in your place if you take grandpa's chair, right? So we have this in our culture as well. And it would be a strange thing if you show up at a wedding or at a Thanksgiving, you take grandpa's chair at a wedding and you sit in the bride or the groom's seat. Because when the wedding party comes in and they announce this is Mr. and Mrs., it's going to be an awkward walk of shame for you to get up and walk back to the dark corner, right? And so we don't do this. And Jesus is saying, so why are you doing this? When Jesus is invited, the story says that all the eyes are watching him. And then he heals a man and he turns the tables. And now what he's doing is Jesus is noticing what they're doing. He's noticing how they're scrambling and how they're posturing and how they're trying to take the seat that is best as they come in, the invitees. And he's saying, this isn't the way that this is supposed to be done. When you overestimate your importance, you will be put to public shame. If you sit in the last seat simply for honor, you might not get moved up. So he's not just talking about where to sit at a party. He's addressing the heart that seeks exaltation, the heart that seeks recognition at any cost. He's addressing that heart. And so what he does is he follows this parable with a little bit of a story. He addresses the guy who invited him. Verse 12. He said also to the man who had invited him, now this might not be the host, and it probably very likely isn't the host. There was the host of the party who was a ruler of the Pharisees, and then somebody thought, hey, let's bring Jesus into this meal. And so Jesus probably thought that this guy is kind of friendly. Yes, I'll sit down and I'll have a meal with you. And after he saw what was going on, he turns to the guy that invited him, and he basically says, when you have a party, don't make it like this. Right? I love Jesus' boldness. Have you ever done that? Have you ever been invited somewhere, and then you just insult the host? because he's being ungodly? Jesus does that, right? So much for peace-loving hippie Jesus, because here he is causing trouble. I like that about him. When you go to a dinner or a banquet, when you give a dinner or banquet, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest also they invite you in return and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. You will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. So Jesus turns to his friend, and he says, when you have a banquet or a dinner, don't make it like this one. Don't be like this one. This one is all about doing something to get something in return. Giving to get. Don't do that. That's what Jesus is saying. We're not supposed to give to get. And here's what he says. He says, don't invite your friends or your brothers or your rich neighbors or anybody who can repay you. Now, let's not get in our minds that Jesus is saying, never have fellowship with people. Never have a party with people that you enjoy. How do I know that? Because Jesus does it all the time. Okay? He's not saying don't ever do this. What he's doing is he's challenging the mindset of many of us, particularly those of us in the church, who are terrible at something called biblical hospitality. And so at this point in the story, we need to understand there's got to be a distinction, an understanding of the distinction between hospitality and fellowship. What we do in the church very well is we do fellowship, but we don't do hospitality very well, do we? Here's the difference. Hospitality cannot be repaid. You're inviting the poor and the lame and the crippled and the blind. They cannot repay you when you throw a feast for them. Now, fellowship, you can be repaid. You can be repaid with camaraderie. You can be repaid with thinking this. Like you can't, they can pay you back. And Jesus is saying, he's not saying don't ever do that, but he's saying when you're throwing a feast, when you're doing things to be a blessing, just be a blessing. Practice hospitality. Do things for people who cannot repay you. And if you do that, you will be blessed. You will be blessed because that is what God's kingdom is like. It's like doing things for people who cannot pay you back. And so Jesus is here teaching the good news of the kingdom, that what God is like is God is a host who will throw a banquet for people who cannot pay him back. And if we're to be like God, that's what we're to be like. And so we need to understand, we need to distinguish between fellowship and hospitality. Fellowship, particularly in the church, we do really well. We have people that think like us, smell like us, act like us. They're at our house all the time, and we love their company. But we do a terrible job with hospitality, which is reaching out and being a blessing to people who can never repay you. And Jesus is saying we need to do that. Hospitality is given, it's not repaid. Fellowship is repaid. And Jesus is teaching that hospitality reveals God's kingdom. Now the biblical pattern and the reason why we structure our gatherings the way that we do is that there's, in the Bible, revelation and response. God teaches us something about who he is, and we respond to it. That's why some of you maybe have grown up in a community, a church community, where you spend the front time of the worship gathering singing and getting ready. I've even heard people say, preparing your heart for what God has for you. It's not a bad thing, but what we see is that God doesn't always prepare your heart. Sometimes he just shows up and tells you something, right? And then you have the option to respond. That seems to be the biblical pattern. So the way that we've fashioned our gatherings is we have the scriptures on the front end. We give you a little time to prepare your heart, but then we hear from God and give you an opportunity to respond to what you've heard. The response begins here this morning, and hopefully it continues throughout the week and the way that you live your life. And so if you've ever questioned, why do we do most of the music at the back end? That's why. It's this pattern of revelation response. Well, Jesus has just revealed something about God and his kingdom and about blessing, and somebody responds. And his response isn't necessarily the correct one, but somebody responds. And so let's pick it up in verse 15. We'll read to the end of the chapter, and we'll make some application of it. When one of those who reclined at table with him heard these things, he said to him, "Blessed is everyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of God." I love that. I love this guy too, right? I think he might have heard Jesus preach the Sermon on the Mount, when he gives this, blessed are you, blessed are you, blessed are you. And so he's trying to like add to what Jesus is saying, right? Like, Jesus, I'm on your team. Blessed is everyone who eats at this king, the bread in the kingdom of God, right? Well, I'm glad we're thinking the same way. Thanks, Jesus. Thanks for throwing me that bone. Let me just preach it for you. I've been trying to tell these fools all day, right? This is what we're supposed to be after. And Jesus doesn't let him get away with it, right? And so he corrects him. Verse 16, but, it's a big word there. So you know Jesus isn't affirming what he's saying. He's going to correct his thinking. But he said to him, a man once gave a great banquet and invited many. And at the time for the banquet, he sent his servant to say to those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. Let me stop for just a moment because it might sound a little strange to our modern ears. In ancient times, when you threw a banquet, you would send out the invitation and you would say, hey, can you come to the party? And based on people's response, you would make preparations for the party. We do similar things today. The difference is the amount of work that went into it, right? Because like now I can say, hey, I want to have a party next weekend, so I'm going to invite these people. Let me know if you're going to be there. And then on Friday, I could go on to Kroger, right, and do my thing and get all the things that I need. But in ancient time, they couldn't go down to Kroger or wherever it is that you shop. I'm not trying to endorse Kroger strictly here, but wherever it is that you go, they couldn't do that, right? It took a great amount of effort, so it took time. So there'd be the invitation, hey, I'd like to have a party. Would you come? And then people say, yes, I'll be there. Count me in. And then once you've made all your preparations, then you send out your servant. You say, hey, it's time. Come on. So that's where we are. Sending his servants, it's time to come and eat. Verse 18, but they all alike began to make excuses. The first said to him, I've bought a field, and I must go out and see it. Please have me excused. And another said, I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I go to examine them. Please have me excused. And another said, I have married a wife, and therefore I cannot come. Right? The last guy is like, I don't even have me excused. I'm just not coming. Right? Just a complete no-show. So the servant came and reported these things to his master. Then the master of the house became angry and said to his servant, go out quickly to the streets and lanes of the city and bring in, listen to this, sounds like verse 13, bring in the poor, crippled, and blind, and lame. And the servant said, sir, what you have commanded has been done, and still there is room. And the master said to the servant, go out to the highways and hedges and compel people to come in, that my house may be filled. For I tell you, none of those men who were invited shall taste my banquet. And so he tells the guy that's like, yeah, Jesus, we're on the same team. He says, no, we're not. No, we're not. Because I've sent out the invitation, and you've said you're going to be there, but now you've gotten distracted by things of less importance. And some of you are saying, we've got these excuses, please have me excused. And some of you are just not even showing up. And he's saying, we're not on the same page. And in the end, you won't taste of this banquet. Those who had been invited will not taste of my banquet. Now, the guy that's saying, blessed are those that eat, he's got this assumption that God's made promises to us. And because of the promises he's made to us and to our people, we're just automatically in. It doesn't matter about our hearts. It doesn't matter how we behave. It doesn't matter how we treat one another. We're in, right? This sort of, I'm one of God's, and so I'm in. And on one hand, like, I don't want to downplay that too much because it's just like some of us get beat down and we're like, oh, you're telling me I need to do more? And all I'm telling you is that your heart needs to be changed. Jesus is after your heart. And he's asking, where is your heart in this? Because you're not in just because of where you're born. And you're not in because you have the means to buy your way in. Jesus is saying that it's not about that. It's never been about that. Just because you grew up in the church and you heard the promises of God and you show up for worship doesn't mean you're going to the kingdom. Because some of us are here and we haven't had our hearts changed. And Jesus is saying, I want hearts to be changed because some of us are here pretending like we're going to go to the banquet. And what's actually going on is we're making all kinds of excuses. And the excuses that we make are lame, right? I mean, they've said yes. Everybody wants to go to heaven, don't they? I mean, everybody's like, yeah, that's where I'm going. And everybody wants to get there their own way without the change of heart, right? And so for many in our culture, the way to heaven is to simply die. And I get the heart behind what we're trying to say when we go to funerals and we see somebody who's there and we say, well, now he's in a better place. Really? Just because he died? I mean, he was a scoundrel. He was a terrible person. He hated God all of his life. Why do you think he gets to go to a better place? That's not true. It's not just death that passes you. It's a change of heart. But we all want to go, but then we make these lame excuses as to why we're not there now, why we're not making plans to be a part of the banquet now. And the excuses, like, they're very lame. The first guy is like, I bought a field, so I can't be there. Now, he knew about the event. He's already been invited. He's already said yes, and you don't just happen to buy a field, right? That doesn't just happen to you. Or the next guy, I bought 5 yoke of oxen. That would be like one of us saying, no, I just bought, you know, a fleet of new work trucks. I can't be there. I've got to examine them, make sure they're all running. You don't just happen to buy a fleet of work trucks. And the third one is the funniest to me because I've taken a wife, right? Like the dude is just walking down the street and, oh, there's a girl. Let's get married. Sorry, I can't make it to your party. I found a wife. That definitely didn't happen then. It might happen now with the way that we play with marriage, but it didn't happen then. And so these are lame excuses. You don't just happen to, what he's done, each of them in their heart, all alike, are making excuses as to why other things, other comforts, other priorities take precedent and distract them from what they're supposed to be about. And we do the same thing, don't we? First guy's deal is possessions. What do you own? And how is that distracting you from being a blessing to other people? Second thing is what you're accomplishing, your work, right? What you use to make a name for yourself. The third thing is your relationships, your level of intimacy, and how you're utilizing that to distract you from God's kingdom. The guests had been invited. They agreed that they were going to attend. At the point where the banquet is ready, they change their minds. These things are more important. They have their comforts. They have their priorities. And Jesus is looking at the people at the party and saying, you're like that. You lack humility. You lack knowledge of your proper place. You lack hospitality. And the kingdom will not be full of you. In fact, you'll never taste of my banquet. That's one of the scariest things that we can hear from the Lord, isn't it? You're not welcome here. So we've been talking about this for weeks. You're not welcome in my presence because you think other things are more important than being here. So go ahead, enjoy your comforts, enjoy your pleasures, but they're fleeting and they're not going to last. Your possessions, your name for yourself through work, the relationships, all of that is going to change. But I won't. But you can have that. You can have that. See, many of us think that we're humble and hospitable. But most of us are like these Pharisees, aren't we? We're full of excuses. And they're lame excuses. Some of us, we refuse to take the lowly seat. We refuse to serve the poor, thinking that we must only serve those who can recognize and dignify us. And so when it comes to our possessions, we'll share them with people who can repay us. Right? We won't give these away to be a blessing to others. We become very stingy with our stuff. With our work, you guys know this. I mean, I struggle with this as a pastor, but I realize that my struggle is not unique. And I'll be honest with my struggle. You probably suffer the same things at your places of work where you're wondering, are people like genuinely interested in being around you because they like you? Or they like what you can do for them. And that's the thing, like being a pastor, there are some folks that will call me and want to spend time with me, and I've got to wonder, what are you after? Are you after a position of authority? Are you after a platform? Like, why do you want to be around me? And you guys probably struggle with the same thing, right? Are you friends with me just because you think this is going to get you somewhere in this job? Because that's what we do. I mean, we posture with people and we play games with people and we're not there to be a blessing and to serve them and to make their lives happier. We're there for us. And some of us refuse to do things if we're not recognized for it. Right? We refuse to get our hands dirty because nobody's going to notice. And so We don't take the seat that's lowly. We want to take the seat that's exalted. So when it comes to a church community, we've got plenty of people that want to stand up here and share their thoughts and opinions about things, and far fewer people who are willing to come in and serve and clean toilets just because it creates a blessing and it creates an environment where people can be less distracted so they can focus on hearing the gospel and have their lives changed. Pastor Justin, long story here. Hopefully I won't get too far off track. But one of the reasons why I love this man and why I count him as a dear brother and a trusted leader is the way that he came into leadership here at Missio. We moved to Cincinnati several years back, and as I'm unloading my moving truck, there's another guy who is an intern at Mars Hill Church in Seattle. He grew up in Cincinnati, and he wanted to talk about me coming here to plant a church. He wanted to find out what we were doing and learn more about the church. And his heart was golden that was in it. But he showed up the day that, like, we're trying to unload our moving truck. And so he's trying to stop me and ask me questions about church planning and pastoring and all these sorts of things. And I'm like, you know, bro, I will meet with you all day tomorrow. Right now, I got to get these boxes out of the truck. So grab a box, move it in the house. We'll talk tomorrow. Okay? So he grabbed a box, moved in the house, and then he left. And so I met him the next day, and I don't mean to, like, throw him under the bus too hard, but there he is. So we met the next day in Westchester, Ohio on 747 Caribou Coffee. Some of you know where that is, right? Middle of nowhere, although now it's kind of grown up and whatever. So we're sitting there, we're having coffee, and in walks a guy that I went to seminary with in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I'm thinking, what in the world is this guy doing here in Westchester, Ohio, of all places, the day after I move here to plant a church? And so after my meeting with the guy from Seattle, he left. It was a good meeting, good guy, love him. He's a good brother. Love to see him come back here and do his thing. But I go over and I sit down with this guy I went to seminary with, and he's meeting with Justin. And they're talking, and come find out he's planting a church. And they're talking about their vision for it, and I'm watching Justin, like, do, if you know Justin, sometimes at those meetings, he does a lot more of the talking, right? I love Justin, but that's just how he rolls, okay? And so I'm listening to him talk, and I realize, like, okay, he's reading the right things, he's thinking the right ways, like, I like a lot of what he's talking about. Now, he was serving as a pastor of worship arts at another church. So there's three guys, different churches, all with a vision to do different things, but he and I, like, we seem to have this alignment in our souls, in our spirits, and what the Lord wanted to do. And so I finally look at the guy I went to seminary with, and I'm like, hey, are you asking him to join your ministry? Because if you don't, I will. I really like this guy. And so he didn't, and I did. And I told Justin, I was like, I don't have money for you. We don't have any people. Like, it's me and my wife and my three kids at this point, and we'd love to have you join us. And Justin said, okay. And so over the next months, he left his position there, and he moved his pregnant wife and daughter down to the city. And in the first gathering, I told him, like, for a year he was delivering pizzas in Over the Rhine. It wasn't quite a year, but it was a significant amount of time, like significant enough that he said, I'm going to leave my title, my position, my comfort in a place that I could probably just keep doing this and earn a paycheck. And I'm going to do something for the kingdom, whether or not we have people or you give me a title. And he got his hands dirty, and he served, and he was here almost as much as I was here. And so I look at that, I'm like, here's a guy that's not posturing himself for anything. He just wants to see people converted to the gospel of Christ. That's a man I'll trust. That's a man I will follow. And that's the way we want to raise up leaders here. Guys that are willing to get their hands dirty, guys that aren't posturing themselves, that will only serve if they'll be recognized. He probably would have stayed with us for another 10 years if I didn't do anything for him. And that's why I'm like, I got to pay this brother to keep him here, because if not, somebody else is going to snag him up. And those are the kinds of leaders that we want to see growing up here. But so many of us are only interested in serving if we can be recognized. And Jesus is saying, no, it's the opposite. It's the opposite. Now, lest we think that we're super humble and we've got this thing, some of us are very willing to serve, right? Some of us are like, oh, I can do that. If that will get me a position, then I'll do it. And so while some of us refuse to serve, others of us are very quick to serve, but we serve in order to be recognized and exalted. And so we're doing a little bit of the opposite of what Jesus is after. Because some of us hear Jesus saying, if you want to sit at the grown-up table, sit at the kiddie table. And so we're like, I will sit at the kiddie table if they're going to move me up. And that's the only reason. Their motivation is skewed. And we take the lowly seat. We'll serve the poor. We'll serve the needy. But our motivation is to be recognized. We're a people who primarily give to get temporal rewards. And so here's what this looks like. Some of you are saying, I will serve. And you get in. And you get your hands dirty. And you get tired. And it's not sexy. And nobody's recognizing you. And in your heart, what starts to happen is you start to say, these people are so ungrateful. Nobody ever says thank you to me. Nobody ever recognizes the work that I do. And if it weren't for me, your toilets would be disgusting. I am so great. And so we're willing to get our hands dirty, but we're doing it for the wrong reasons, because there's still in our heart a desire to be recognized and exalted rather than to simply be a blessing and be patient. Because Jesus says, you will be repaid. You will be repaid. So I don't want to take that motivation off the table. What I want to do is I want to raise up the motivation and say, so what are you working for? Are you working for the little compliments? Are you working for the little pleases and thank yous that somebody might give you? Because for many of us, that might be the only reward you get, and it will burn up. And here's what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that we should be a community that is ungrateful, right? We try to say this to our leaders. In a couple weeks here, we're going to have a leadership dinner for those who have served us well, just to say thank you. We love you. And I'm going to encourage my leaders all the time, hey, make sure that you say thank you to people. Like, overwhelm them with your gratitude. So I'm not saying we should be an ungrateful community. But man, if that's the reason that we do it, is so that somebody recognizes, somebody notices, it reveals something about our hearts, that we're far too easily pleased, and that we work for temporal rewards, temporal possessions, temporal titles, temporal relationships. And the thing about relationships, they change. They're constantly changing. My son had the privilege of seeing one of his best buddies this past weekend who came up from Asheville, and it was so cool to see. They haven't really spent a lot of time in the last 3 years, but it's so cool to see how God has shaped each of them, and they were still like best buddies, but they don't get that day-to-day interaction because things change, relationships change. You probably aren't friends with the same people you were 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and even if you are, the nature of that relationship, it's changed a little bit, right? It just changes things. So those relationships, they change a little bit. There are relationships with God that don't change. But the relationships we have with people, when we make that of utmost importance at the neglect of our priorities, it messes the whole balance of life up. So the reality is, for many of us, we're not going to be rewarded this side of eternity. We're going to serve. We're going to get our hands dirty. We're going to serve people that cannot repay us. And we're never going to get recognized for it. And for those of us that do that, we're the most blessed. The times where people don't come up to me and say, thank you for that sermon, I'm hoping that as faithfully as I did it, like hopefully it's not because it's just a terrible sermon, right? But when they don't come up, I'm hoping that there will still be a reward for me in heaven someday. I'm working for that reward. I'm not working for the compliments. Although they're nice, that's not what motivates me. Because at the end of the day, you can say thank you for that all day. What I want to see is change in your life. That's what I'm working for. That's the eternal reward. So for some of us, that's what we're working on. You're never going to get recognized for it, whether it's here in this community, out there, wherever, you might not get recognized. And that's okay. Because for some of us, we're getting recognized all the time. And that's the best it's ever going to get. If that's your motivation, when somebody comes up and says thank you and recognizes it, that's your reward. And that reward is going to be very fleeting. And so what Jesus is saying is, let's have a heart for eternal things. Don't work for rewards now that are temporal. Work for the rewards that are eternal, when you get paid at the resurrection of the just. So he's saying, like, in your parties and your dinners and your feasts, when you do these things, do it for people that can't repay you, because I know the God and Father of all, and he will repay you tenfold, and it's worth it. Don't settle for this little blessing. And so what Jesus ends up doing is he looks and he says, many of us will continue. We'll reject our humility. We'll reject hospitality. We will not taste of the blessing of God's heavenly kingdom. But some will. Some will be invited. Some will respond. God's dinner banquet will be full, and they'll be full of the people who recognize that they are poor, that they are blind, that they are crippled, that they are lame. And what Jesus does is, after he's healed this man with a swollen body, is he looks at us and he says, in your swollen head and your swollen heart, I want to heal that too. I want to heal that too. And the way he does it, he says, you are the poor, the blind, the cripple, and the lame. And I can heal that. When you recognize that you're not superior to other people, when you work for a reward that says, let God repay you. And so for many of us, what we don't realize is that we are the poor. We have nothing to offer to get invited to this banquet, right? You can't buy your way into it. In fact, those of us with a lot of possessions, those things tend to distract us from being a part of God's heavenly kingdom. We are the poor with nothing to offer for our salvation, but Jesus offers us his wealth. He offers us his position at the table. He says that though you're poor, I'm wealthy, I give my wealth to you. We don't realize that we are the blind, unable to see the truth. And so Jesus gives us his spirit. He gives us his vision of life as we were created to live it. And you don't get it if you don't realize your need for it. If you don't recognize that you're blind, you'll never see. If you don't realize that you're poor, you'll never be rich. If you don't realize that you are crippled, unable to overcome sin, you'll never have his spirit to empower you to overcome sin. If you don't realize that you're lame, unable to come to God on your own, you'll never be able to truly live. And so what Jesus is doing is he's saying, let me take you over to the cross and show you those things about yourself. You are poor and needy and crippled and blind and lame, and I love you and I welcome you in. And if you will acknowledge that, you're invited. But as long as you posture and play these games and seek the high seat at the table and don't serve or only pay, do things that will get a payment in return, you'll never taste of my banquet. But because Jesus is alive and his spirit dwells in us, we can respond to that. And the response that we can have is twofold. First thing, we want to know what is eternal. And God the Spirit gives us that knowledge, right? Three things. There might be more. As I thought about this week, and things popped into my head, I thought, I think this can fit into one of these categories. Three things that are eternal. Number one, God. God is eternal, right? When I talked about relationships, how they change, God doesn't change. Right? God is eternal. And so knowing that God is eternal and that you are not God and that there is a God who is eternal that never changes should change your perspective about a lot of things. God is eternal. Second thing that's eternal, God's word is eternal. His promises are forevermore. And so we can bank on that. We can put our trust in his promises. We need to know what they are, but his promises are eternal. And then thirdly, his people are eternal. And so they're worth investing in. God, his word, his people, they're eternal. And so we need to know that so that we can set our priorities straight. Because what we do is we think that our possessions, our power, right, our work, and our relationships are the eternal thing at the expense of God, his promises, and his people. And we warp the whole thing. The possessions that we have, they're all going to burn up. But we spend so much time worried about them. We neglect this. And Jesus says, know what's eternal so that your attitude toward God and toward the vulnerable can be benchmarks of genuine discipleship. Do I have a heart for God? Do I have a heart for his promises? Do I have a heart for his people? If I don't, then my heart is caught up in things that are not eternal. What is motivating me to do what I do? Jesus says, I want to heal that. I want to show you what that leads to. And once we know what's eternal, then we can serve what's eternal. And how do we do that? We use our temporal things as an opportunity to prepare for the eternal. So what does that look like with possessions? It looks like sharing our possessions. My sister and my brother-in-law gave me a great vision of what this looks like. And I've had a taste of it myself. But my son Kai was over at their house. My sister was watching him and his little sister for the weekend. I think it was just an overnight. And while they were out in the backyard playing, Kai and his cousin Noah were picking up rocks. And from the second tier of the deck, they were throwing them down onto the patio, trying to break them, right? That's what boys do. They break things. Okay, if it were rain out there, she would have had multiple rocks. They would have been talking to one another, right? Probably dancing around and singing. But with Kai, he's like, I'm going to break this. And so at one point, he gets the rock, and he winds up, and he throws it down and smashes it as hard as he can. It took the perfect bounce, ricocheted up, and hit the glass door. The whole window just shattered to bits. Now, my sister and my brother-in-law, we're not going to tell my wife and I about this, but Kai was so ecstatic at his muscles and his power that he had to share, right? And so we felt terrible, like, oh my goodness, what are we going to do about it? And they were so cool about it. They were like, no, if you want to teach him a lesson, he can come over, he can work it off, but please don't pay us. Now, we're going to, because I want to take responsibility, but that example of these possessions are not here so that we have a nice door so that our world can be perfect and nobody can mess it up. All right? They have a proper view of their possessions. These things happen. Kids do this. That's what happens in life. My possessions don't rule me. I want you and your family to feel comfortable here, and so let's not let this get between us. But we don't do that, do we? People break our stuff, and we freak out about it. Like, I start to wonder, what would I have done if the roles were reversed? What if it was her son that threw a rock at, like, my car? Would I have freaked out about that? I might have. I'm just being honest. Now, I don't know that we always have that tendency. When we were here for about a week, my wife was driving, and we learned about driving in Cincinnati, which is one of the few cities where at some points during the day you have two lanes, and then at other times you just can park in the middle of the street, right? Have you guys noticed that? That's the craziest thing. This is one of the only cities I've seen that, right? And just imagine you're driving along, you're like, well, this looks like a good place to stop. Stopping right here. I will park here, right? So it makes traffic a little bit intense, and people aren't always paying attention. What ended up happening is my wife was turning left. Somebody ran a red light, demolished our minivan. Now, I've always loved minivans, so that was just a crushing blow to my spirit. My wife has not always loved minivans. I think she was devastated to even be a minivan family, but then we had this really cool one where the doors opened automatically, and it was a very nice van. And the person that ran the red light and demolished our van had state minimum coverage. Don't get state minimum coverage, right? It does not replace a minivan. So we had a decision to make. Is this possession worth, like, crippling somebody who is struggling to make ends meet, probably for years? Or do we suck it up and say, you know what, this possession was a blessing to us, and it was an accident, and so what we're going to do is we're going to take the fall on this one. And it was tough, man. It was a hard struggle. In the end, we decided, let's not ruin this poor lady's life. Let's suck it up, clear out our savings. We have enough money, we will buy another van. And it's not the greatest thing, but we've got what we need. And possessions will not rule us. They can't rule us because Jesus rules us. And if we push Jesus out and let possessions in, we abuse people, we neglect people, and we will have no seat at the banquet table. And so we have got to have our hearts changed about this. And some of us cling so tightly to our possessions that people come in, they mess little things up, and then we get mad at people. And it's really not their fault. What God is doing is he's, in a very gracious way, showing you what's really in your heart. And your heart has a hold of your possessions a little bit too strongly, right? And we could do this with everything, right? We could do this with work. We do this with relationships, particularly among the vulnerable. You recognize that there's a way that we can serve the vulnerable and the needy in our midst in a way that is very ungodly. And I see it happening all the time, particularly among people that want to prove that they're still righteous without Jesus. They want to prove their righteousness by how well they treat the poor and the needy. And all that is patronizing. Because there's a way that you can steal dignity from people that are vulnerable. Because you go to them and you say to them, I have something that I possess that you need and you don't, and I'm superior to you. And so I'll serve you with it. But we don't treat them as equals. We don't sit down with them. We don't listen to their stories. We see ourselves as superior and them as inferior, and we're here to serve them. We're not here like they are, poor and blind and crippled and lame, like Jesus tells us. And Jesus is saying, I want you to change your heart so you see yourself in them. And Wednesday night when we went out on this street outreach, I had a beautiful time with this guy named Lewis. And Lewis was struggling with addiction. But Lewis is a dad with grown-up kids. And so I could have told him the whole time, let me tell you how to get off of this. Let me tell you about Jesus. Let me rescue your soul. And we talked about Jesus. We talked about it as friends would talk about Jesus. And I learned from him that he's a father with grown-up kids, and I just asked him, what was that like? And I hope that he was instilled with a sense of dignity, that he has value, that he's not a throwaway person, that my accomplishments in life do not trump his accomplishments in life just because I haven't struggled with addiction. Do you see how we can treat people, how we can rob their dignity if there are projects and that we're here to give them something that they don't have so that we can feel superior to them? We do it all the time. Now not all of us do. And I know a lot of you moved forward last week just out of the genuine desire to be a blessing to people. We want to keep that up. We want to celebrate that. But I want to ask us, like, how are we serving people, particularly the vulnerable among our community? And I think this shows its head, particularly when we talk about our kids. How do we serve our kids? How do we do it in a way that restores dignity to them? They're a vulnerable community of people in our midst. In fact, one of the guys in our mission group mentioned, he said, I think that children represent the best of us, right? Because they haven't grown sophisticated in how they hide their sin yet. It's just out there. They're going to sin. Everybody's going to know it. But then I love the way that they seek forgiveness. They want restoration. They want it quickly. And as we get older, we get cold and we get callous to that. And so this past Wednesday, I had the privilege of, instead of leading our mission group, I was assigned that week to be with the kids. And so I spent the whole night. We were outside. We played duck, duck, goose. We played freeze tag. We played steal the bacon. There were tears. There was upset hearts. There was forgiveness. And it was probably one of the greatest nights of mission group that I've experienced, right? You guys are in my group. I love you. I'm sorry. I'd rather hang out with the kids, okay? And I wanted to raise the bar. Like, I want them to feel like that you are a valuable part of our community. I'm not wasting my time by spending it with the kids. I'm seeing the kingdom of God at work. And my 9-year-old son said to me at the end, he said, Daddy, I don't want you to teach anymore. I want you to come out and play with us every week. I thought, maybe I can make that happen. Let's find somebody else to deal with the sophisticated sinners who are good at hiding it, and I'll just play with the kids and talk to them about the kingdom. Because I suspect that if Jesus were at our house, he'd probably want to hang out with the kids. He'd probably say, hey, let's go out and swing on the swing set. And we need to be a people like that. Like, not just worried about life's big, complicated problems, but let's look for the vulnerable. Let's serve them. Let's not look for people that can pay us back. Let's go after the people that can't. Let's be hospitable, because that's what the kingdom of God is like. The Father wants us to emphasize eternity in our lives. Jesus heals our prideful, selfish, temporal hearts, and God the Spirit empowers us to properly emphasize the eternal perspective on possessions, accomplishments, and intimate relationships. I want to give you a moment to respond to these things. I'm going to give you time to reflect silently, to pray. If you need somebody to pray with you, there'll be somebody in the back. You can find Pastor Jess and myself. We'd be glad to do that. And then after you've reflected, I want to give you a chance to respond. And you'll respond by singing to one another. We'll start with lament, like we're sinful people, and we'll end it on a high note. Jesus has forgiven us. And so we'll work from lament to praise, and we'll sing the gospel. And as we're singing the gospel, I think Jesus will reveal to you what's going on in your heart, and he'll invite you to come in and by faith receive him. And so you'll come forward, and the act of receiving him is expressed in partaking of communion. You'll partake of the body, which is his, the bread, which is his body broken for you, and of the cup, which is the representation of his blood spilled out for you, connecting to your brokenness, cleansing you from sin. And if you don't need Jesus, we invite you, stay at your seat. Don't mock this. And if you don't need him and this is just a dead ritual, stay at your seat. It's okay. But when you recognize your need for him, come forward, celebrate communion with him. Receive Christ. Don't just partake in a ritual. If you have an aversion to the cup or to the bread because of diet or conscience reasons, we have gluten-free bread in the white bowls and juice in the black bowls. And we invite you to come and partake of communion that way. I love you. Let me pray for you and give you an opportunity to respond. Father, thank you for your word. Thank you that you expose what's really going on in our hearts. And now that it's exposed, deal with it. Show us where we need to repent. Help us to consider meals that we need to have this week with the vulnerable. For some of us, it's with our kids. For some of us, it's with people that just simply can't pay us back. But posture us to be in a position of blessing for the sake of your kingdom that we want to partake of forever and ever. In the name of the Father, Son, and Spirit, amen.